This is best friend of the show, Monica Cabina, artist and colorist on Batman, The Adventures Continue.
Hey, this is Jordan Gibson, artist of Batman, The Adventures Continue, and you're listening to the DCAU Review.
Hosted by Cal and Liam. Streaming at DCAUReview.com.
And on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome, everyone, to another bonus episode of the DCAU Review. I am Liam, and with me, as he always is Cal. Cal, we've got yet another issue of Batman The Adventures Continue Season 3 to talk about today, the tie-in series to the original Batman the Animated Series and New Batman Adventures. And starting here with Issue 6 of Season 3, and it's a brand new storyline that appears to be a first of three parts that will bring us to our dramatic finale of this series.
That is correct. We finally have that confirmed, that it is indeed the series finale. I think one of the at least I was suspicious, because initially they talked about it being the conclusion, and I think the original solicits for the season, and then they kind of didn't mention it anymore after that. And there was some talk with Alan Burnett and Paul Dini in an interview about doing some extra stuff, some follow up on some of those threads that they didn't necessarily wrap up in the first season. So, but we did get one of the solicits confirmed. Sadly, we are the final countdown has begun here as we kick things off with our final three issues with The Offer Part 1. And of course, before we get into our discussion, a quick reminder that this episode is brought to you by the Pod Tower YouTube channel. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today, and you can check out a boatload of podcasts. If you're into podcasts that discuss DC animation or specifically the DC animated universe, then this channel is the right one for you, because it's got not only the entire Tim Talk, named after Bruce Tim himself, the entire catalog for Tim Talk, where they talked about the entire DCAU run and a whole bunch of other stuff. But it's also got the ongoing Jump on the Batwagon podcast from Watchtower Database. And it's got our podcast as well, including all previous bonus episodes where we discuss the not only Batman The Adventures Continue, but also the Justice League Infinity tie-in. So lots of good stuff over there. We invite you to head over to youtube.com/thepodtower and subscribe today. But Liam, before we get into our kickoff, just the kind of our synopsis of the issue, a quick reminder, this, of course, is written by Alan Burnett and Paul Dini, returning our artists for this issue, the great Ty Templeton and best friend of the show, Monica Cabina, artist and colorist, respectively. And then we had Josh Reed as our letterer, and we have quite a few different covers that we'll talk about when we get to the end. And Andrew Marino, our editor for the issue.
That's right, Cal. So we kick things off seemingly in the middle of a battle as Batman, Robin, and Batgirl are tangling with Man-Bat, a character we did not ever get to see in the New Batman Adventures, although he did appear in a few issues of the original tie-in comics, Gotham Adventures. But we quickly reveal that that Bruce is actually watching some old news footage on his phone of a fight between the three and Man-Bat that took place months ago. And we get a little bit of narration and exposition from Tim. And as we sort of pull out from the footage to the phone, we see that Bruce and Tim they're taking a vacation. They're out on a private resort that apparently Bruce Wayne owns, though he's quick to point out that it's really just Wayne Enterprise owns it, and he signs the checks. but yes, Bruce is of course very restless, and Tim mentions there hasn't been really any big crime or any big issues in Gotham in going on 4 months, ever since they took down the Joker at the end of the last issue. No breakouts from Arkham or any sort of superheroics, so much so that that Bruce and Tim are forced to actually take a break and relax, and Tim's very much enjoying himself, enjoying the time off, but Bruce can't shake the feeling, of course, that that something is about to blow. And as we are there, we cut back to a scene in Gotham City, in the sewers of Gotham City. We see a mysterious woman running through the sewers, clearly very frantic, very panicked as she's being chased by some men with swords. We don't quite see exactly what's going on, but she is just barely able to elude them by escaping down further into the sewers. And we cut there to, not cut, it's not a cut because it's not an episode. We do this every time. And then in our next sequence of panels, we see that Bruce is practicing his sword skills, and a woman in a sort of protective gear, complete with mask, challenges him to a duel. He's, of course, not that interested, but as the fight begins, he realizes very quickly that he knows exactly who this woman is, and it's the returning Talia al Ghul, who has a sort of proposition for him, as he finds out. They're speaking about how, as it turns out, while Bruce Wayne may own the resort, this island resort, it is, of course, the Al Ghul family who owns the island. And she lets Bruce know that her father is actually waiting in a yacht just off the coast of the island, and she invites Bruce to come out and see them and then take a look around and then see what's going on there. And we cut to this very gritty noir evening where Harvey Bullock and Renee Montoya are out on the beat, sort of remarking to themselves about how quiet Gotham's been. And I love this bit where they're arguing over who's responsible, where Harvey, of course, wants to give all of the credit to the cops, whereas Montoya is kind of reminding him that Batman might have had something to do with that as well. But Harvey again mentions they haven't seen them at all, and just as they're arguing, the mysterious woman breaks out of a manhole cover and tries to get their attention, but she is unsuccessful, to say the least.
Yeah, she's unfortunately a victim of a police brutality. Not unintentional in this case, though, as she is hit by a car. Unfortunately, in the rain, because she popped out of a manhole. Kind of suddenly. So I don't think they were expecting to see her there. Maybe just police negligence in this case would be because Montoya and Harvey Bullock were too busy talking to each other to see that she was there. But she did sort of jump on the hood, also this mysterious figure, but she's pulled off and kind of pulled away. We still don't have a reveal on who the person is, nor the assailants. But she does manage to break away, and we see her hiding again, still in the shadows, in the rain, on the roof, and she's still attempting to escape whoever these masked men are. We cut back to Bruce, who is there at night now. As you mentioned, Talia had extended an offer to Bruce to come upon the largest ship in docked. On this private resort, stating that her father was there, and that he's become more introspective, and that she would like for Bruce to join her. We cut to Tim and Bruce in their little cabana, and Tim is talking about just how incredible it is to be there still. He's just over the moon. It's just the little things. Like, I guess coming from a life where he didn't have a lot and had to steal a lot, the idea that there's just, you can order s'mores anytime you want to, like, it's still blows his mind. It's pretty funny. A fish out of water type idea here. But Bruce is not interested in enjoying s'mores with Tim. Mentioned that he's going to go windsurfing. Tim immediately suspects something is up because it's 10 o'clock at night, and Bruce kind of plays it off, invites him to come with him, but you know what, Tim wants to chill out because Liam, the hotel room gets Max. We learn that it's no longer HBO Max here in the DCAU either. It officially gets
is David Zaslav canon to the DCAU now?
Good question. I think at least to Paul Dini he is.
Well, yes, we get that brilliant bit of corporate synergy there, Tim staying in. What do you think Tim's watching? Like, Rick and Morty was the first one that came to mind. Maybe one of those Guy Fieri shows.
Yeah, I mean, now that they've taken everything off of, I don't even know what's on Max anymore. Like,
Good point.
what can you get on there
It's
that
been a little bit distributed among some of the other services now. So, yeah, there's less good stuff and more like reality shows that are that used to be on a different app that
maybe
they
he's watching
combined
the
with.
Sex and the City reboot show?
Oh, now we're talking. He's such a Samantha after all. I don't know. I've never seen the show. I just wanted to say that.
That's good.
But anyway, yes, we from there we got to yes, like secret agent Bruce Wayne with his night vision goggles windsurfing.
This is an action figure, by the way.
Oh my gosh. If
Absolutely. Ty Templeton was just like, yeah, I'm gonna draw this action figure. This is exactly what I'm doing here. If this was a pitch for Kenner, you have everything that you need here. The only thing that I guess you would probably have to include like a cowl
Yes.
if you were gonna hypothesize this to really get this to sell to a child.
Yeah, you need the bat logo somewhere.
Yeah, that would be on the giant sale, like
Yes, 100%.
by the time it made it to production. Like it would be a giant Batman and on the surfboard probably, but windsurfer Batman, yeah, standing ovation, Mr. Templeton. Great job.
Absolutely. So Bruce goes to visit this giant yacht in the harbor. He's met by a few gentlemen with guns, and he takes care of them pretty quickly and steals one of their jet skis. But as he's driving towards the yacht, he's sort of swallowed up in what appears to be some sort of mysterious death trap. Though as it turns out, it's just a little containment unit, and it's going to take Bruce, Talia, and we see Ubu here as along with another servant of Ra's. And it's actually some sort of special connecting device that allows them to walk down to the actual secret lair, the yacht being just a front to a submarine underneath the city.
No real world applications here to talk.
Nothing topical to mention about this.
We're gonna sidestep that.
Billionaire in a submarine, nothing to talk about here. But yes, moving on.
Unfortunate timing.
Oof. Talia alerts Bruce that she's left a suit for him and that he shouldn't be late for dinner. So he quickly gets dressed, and after a brief aside with Ubu, he makes it to dinner where he sees Ra's al Ghul. And Ra's isn't, he's not looking exactly how you might remember him if you've only watched the original Batman the Animated Series. He's sort of halfway between that Batman the Animated Series, like we'll talk maybe more about this when we get to our little section about art at the end, but halfway between the BTS look and how he looks at the start of the Superman episode, the Demon Reborn. He's all white now. He's showing a little bit more in the way of wrinkles, and he kind of just begins to explain to Bruce that it's all coming to an end for him. He doesn't have that much time left. The Lazarus pits can no longer revive him, and so he's decided he needs to make one last pitch to try to get Bruce to be with Talia and to take over the family business, so to speak. But rather than approaching him by asking him to commit genocide this time, he's come up with a seemingly a new angle to try to get Bruce on board.
That's right. And he mentions that he wants to have a legacy now that the Lazarus Pit is no longer as effective anymore or having zero effect on him. So he's been more introspective, as his daughter mentioned to Bruce before, and discussing just what his legacy will be. So he reveals to Bruce that he's created this, I guess it's Gaia grain. I don't know how you would pronounce that, Gaia
I
or Gaia.
assume like Gaia, like the is it a Greek or Roman god goddess?
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. The goddess of life. He does mention that. So I'll go with Gaia. George Katsoudis can message us and let us know whether or not we pronounce that correctly, since he's a native speaker of Greek. But yes. Ra's mentions that he has this grain, again mentioned named after the goddess of life, and that it's going to lead to life for the entire planet because it's a sustainable grain that could be grown anywhere, in extreme cold and extreme heat. He mentions Siberian The Siberian winters and the warm, hot sands of the Sahara. It doesn't matter. It flourishes no matter where and no matter the season. So he talks about not only is this an incredibly effortlessly modified grain, but then he points out that everything that they had just dined upon was made from that very same grain. So he talks about how he's basically becoming what everybody has made that one meme about. Is it Elon Musk meme or who's the it's like, if this guy spent what he made in like 1 hour, he could feed the entire, like he could end
yes.
with like one hundredth of his wealth or whatever it is, like
mm-hmm.
basically decided to answer that meme and he's going to feed all 8 billion inhabitants of the world with this grain in order to restart for humankind.
He's also kind of doing the thing that everyone pointed out, I guess, anytime there's like this sort of a population reduction villain, mm-hmm. whether it's Raish, whether it's Thanos, where you go, well, why don't you have so much power? Why don't you just make more resources for the planet? Like,
right.
And rather than killing everyone, why don't you just make more food for everyone? Why didn't Thanos just snap twice as much resources into the universe? Well, because the story had to happen, didn't it? That's the honest answer. But here, yes, we see that with Raish talking about this magical grain that can be grown anywhere in the world, any climate, from the desert to the Arctic. And that's kind of his pitch. And he mentions that everything they're eating and drinking during their meal was made by this grain. And once again, he just sort of makes the hard pitch. And speaking of hard, we cut to the bedroom. Hey, now. And Talia kind of just reinforces what she wants, and that the fact that she believes in Bruce, and that he could that Batman has done a lot for the world, but that perhaps Bruce Wayne, with his resources combined with her and her father's and this new sort of miracle food, perhaps they can do even more good for the world. They can save the entire planet in this way. And we cut away as they share a kiss. This is the moment where where they fade to black and just imply things. So we're saved by the next panel down as we cut back to Gotham City, and we actually cut to Harley and Ivy's apartment, where they're just having a nice night in. And as they're sort of talking, we see again this mystery woman running on top of the skylight of their greenhouse, and she comes crashing in. And as Harley and Ivy go over to look, they realize we find out just who that mystery woman was. It's Catwoman. It's Selina Kyle. And not far behind are those mystery men that were chasing her. It's not the League of Assassins, as one might have expected, based on Raish and Talia being in this issue. It's the return of the Talons and the Court of Owls. And that's our big cliffhanger for this first chapter of this last three-part story.
Yeah, so I like this as a kickoff. Mm-hmm. Color me intrigued. I think we'll see what happens. It doesn't feel like, I know a lot of the big critique of the Avengers Continue is that it retcons things and disregards other things that happened, and where does this fit, and so much of it. So whether you accept it as canon or not canon is your own choice based on whatever you do. We've talked about that a lot, but I think this, I would be interested to see what, if anything, this may contradict ultimately, at least with just this part. It's an interesting story. It feels mm-hmm. It feels interesting because you're really setting up. Obviously, we as the reader don't trust Raish. It's very interesting to see Bruce kind of let his guard down a little bit just in this one incident to believe that Raish has turned over a new leaf. And I think it's probably multiple factors, but it's not just the fact that Raish is saying that he's turning over a new leaf. He's talking about his legacy. He's not using the Lazarus pit anymore. He just fed Bruce this delicious meal that is this going to poison Bruce later? What's happened with this thing? We don't know. Bruce just willingly accepted food from a guy that's been after him to kill him for years at this point. Okay, sure. Anyway,
that kind of plays into the Sherlock Holmes Moriarty feel of their whole aesthetic, I think, right? Like the proper villain who's not gonna just run out and attack you with a hammer,
right?
He's a proper gentleman. He'll challenge you to a duel when the time comes.
Exactly.
Right.
Honorable villain. That's right. But also, I like the idea that Bruce is blinded in maybe some of this by his love and attraction to Talia, obviously, like that his desire to have this relationship potentially with her is going to lead to whatever happens, and just being around her and his love and care for her may end up being, you know, a vulnerability in this case, because, you know, he's distracted by her or the relationship with her. So, yeah, it's interesting. I'm interested to see where the Catwoman thing goes. I did not see that coming as the reveal at the end. I like it. I love that we're getting the Court of Owls brought back. So we're gonna get some, hopefully at least get a bow on one of our loose ends from prior seasons before this thing wraps up. And ultimately, I think we have plenty of room for baseless speculation on where different things go, for this issue. But, maybe we save that for the end after we talk about the art, but I liked it. It didn't drag in too many places. There's not a lot of action. We get the brief scuffle with Bruce on the jet skis, but it is a lot of dialogue kind of interspersed with those scenes with the mysterious figure that's later revealed to be Selena. So you have the intrigue in the middle of it. But yeah, overall, it's good. It's fine. It's a fine introductory piece. I think it's gonna end up being a sum of its parts. I mean, we're going to figure out where this goes.
Right.
We're going to judge it later on based on how this story progresses and ultimately ends. So yeah, we'll see. But for a kickoff, I think it was fine. You have these two threads that obviously at some point are going to cross. And you left me intrigued as to how they're going to fit together in the next two issues.
That's right. After like 3 years of me predicting that the Court of Owls were going to come back anytime now and make a reappearance after their appearance in two issues of season two, we finally got it here at the end of this issue, and the Talons feature on the cover for next month's issue as well. So, it's exciting. Well, like I said, we'll get into a little bit of speculation on what could be coming next at the end. But first, Cal, as you mentioned, we need to talk a little bit about the art of the issue. Interiors once again done by the dynamic duo of Ty Templeton on pencils and inks, and Monica Cabina, best friend of the show, on colors. And I just have to say off the bat, I could not wait, because I know Monica listens to our show sometimes, especially when we review stuff that she worked on. But I could not wait. I had to message her this week and just let her know. Like, I thought this issue, despite the fact that there aren't like flashy action sequences, is just so gorgeous. I think it's one of the best issues, maybe the best looking issues of the whole of any season of this comic. Like, it's so, there's so much unique stuff in it, and from, especially of course, you know, talking about colors, like from the color sequence, from you cut from the resort in the daytime and it's all these, you know, blues, and you got the sand, and then you cut immediately from there, you cut to Gotham, and it's this whole, it's very much, it honestly reminds me, reminiscent, especially when she's out in the rain, when Selena's out in the rain, reminds me a lot of Monica's work with other friend of the show, Jordan Gibson, earlier in the season. It's straight out of that original animated series, heavy shadow, you know, dark blues and purples and blacks, and you got the rain, the real film noir feel to it. And then you have like, and then you cut from there back to, you know, Talia and Bruce on the beach at sunset. You have all these beautiful purples and oranges and all that. You got those hues, and then all the way to the end when they're sort of down in the deep sea and in the submarine, everything kind of has a little bit of like a green hue, greenish bluish hue to it as they're underwater, which I think is fantastic as well. Just fantastic job. Not surprisingly, by our two hosts. There's some really great panels we could talk about. We always talk about with Ty's style being more of a multi-panel kinetic. Those brief action sequences that we get feel very, very exciting because we get so many different shots and looks and angles at the action. So I think there's a lot to like in this issue. And then there's one panel in particular that I'll let you give your thoughts. And then I want to point out is probably, I think, one of the best images of the whole series. But just big picture, what were your thoughts on the art for this month's issue?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. You got a bunch of different things that you typically don't necessarily see in or haven't seen in this series. You have a beach scene, not too many beaches in Gotham, I recall. So you have this entire sequence that takes
Metropolis has the beach. Gotham just has the forest and the desert.
That's right. And the farmland where Critters takes place. And so, but yeah, no beaches in Gotham. But for that, specifically with this series, the three seasons, I don't recall a beach sequence taking place. So you have a new locale, and you have the unique thing where you have three. I wouldn't even call the third or four, I guess, technically. I wouldn't even call the third and fourth panels really. I wouldn't really count them because of how small the images are, but you only have Batman in two of the panels. The rest of the issue, yeah, 100% Bruce Wayne and Tim out of costume. So you don't really have a lot of bright comic-y costumes and colors to rely on. So mm-hmm. To your point, the fact that I think something that Monica mentioned when she was on the show a couple of months ago was that she's really focused on trying to make the different scenes have different feels and use different tones and colors to really give different themes to different to like when you cut to a different scene. We're using that again. I'm using that again. When you move to a different sequence. So from here, you have the beach and it's bright and the sky looks blue. And Humblebrag, just having just personally come from a vacation in Hawaii, it's like this is exactly what the skies look like. This purple and orange and reds and, you know, those clear blue skies during the day and these palm trees and all of that. It makes you feel like you're in some tropical area. So all of that with the visuals and then Monica's colors on top of it, you know, the pencils and Monica's excellent mm-hmm. colors on top of it. I had the same thought as far as the rain sequences with it's almost black and white. Like some of those sequences are, especially outside of the car in the rain when Catwoman gets hit by the police car, it is, the color is so subtle. It's great though. It gives you that noir feeling, as you mentioned it, and it does pay, does feel like a callback to some of those first sequences in the first issue of this season. I love the shot of Catwoman falling in with a lightning strike behind her. I highly doubt it's a coincidence that yeah. similar to the Dark Knight Returns cover.
Oh yeah.
I think Mr. Templeton went out of his way to potentially shout out that that famous Frank Miller cover with that one panel there. Mm-hmm. Like poetry, it rhymes. we already mentioned Windsurfer Bruce Wayne, his windsurfer costume. I love his
great Bruce fits in this episode. We talk on the main show all the time about we're always get so excited when we get Bruce out of that brown suit and into some fun alternate outfits. And he's got a bunch in this one, in this issue.
Yeah. He has like Mr. Freeze goggles that he's wearing while he's windsurfing. And then, as you mentioned, he gets to put on the tux later on. He's got casual beach vibes, Bruce, with like a half open shirt. We get
he's got like the baby blue polo and on the yep. beach.
He's got the Kimura and when he's, mm-hmm. doing his sword work later on, and then just like a blanket when he's doing his sword work later on. Double
Hey-o.
Of course, and then wrapping things up with the reveal of the Court of Owls popping up in with Harley and Ivy looking very much like we've seen them in Mad Love in Holiday Nights, rather, their appearance in Holiday mm-hmm. Nights. I love Harley's got some cute little slippers going on there. And then in the background, there's like a painting of a very famous sad clown named Emmett Kelly. You can Google him if you're curious, that kind of bearded sad clown with the hat look. So love the little Easter eggs, the little things that Mr. Templeton works in there as little homages and shout outs to the past. But yeah, it's a visually a very good, very good issue. I concur with you. I love just the different tones and shades that are used in the different sequences that really make you feel like you've moved locations. So great visuals. Not a lot of action, as we mentioned, cause it is pretty dialogue heavy. We get a couple of shots that are, or a couple of drawings that are done in that Bruce scene with the guys on the jet skis, the windsurf versus the jet ski, and then Catwoman being chased in the rain is excellent as well. But yeah, not as heavy on the action this month. So a lot of storytelling done with more storytelling done with the visuals than kind of the action packed issue that we had last month.
Yeah, and I think what still comes to mind, especially with Ty Templeton's work, his the very expressive faces that we get, whether it's the first shot we kind of get of Selena before we know it's her in the sewer, we just see these hulking creatures running behind her, and we just see this look of sort of exasperation and fear on her face. I thought that was fantastic. The sort of surprise on Bruce's face when he unmasks Talia, and then I think is maybe one of the best single panels between Ty and Monica's work is when Raish is recounting his inability to continue to use the Lazarus pits. They cut to this shot of him sort of bursting out of the pit, and just there's just blood pouring out of his eyes, and it looks like something out of The Exorcist. Like it looks like something out of a horror comic. And I was just I stared at that image for like 5 minutes. I was just so impressed. It's such a great horrors of like sci-fi body horror from like the 1940s. I felt like it's just a brilliant image, I thought. So yeah, the expressive faces of Ty Templeton's artwork always spring to mind when we do these art reviews, Cal. And before we move to the main event, that being our baseless speculation station, we will of course shout out a couple of the comic book artists that supplied covers for this month. We will mention first the A cover. The main cover was done by really one of my favorite comic artists, period, of all time. That being Evan Doc Shaner, who sort of produced this image, very much invoking the original animated series, I would say, more than the new Batman Adventures. Mm-hmm. But you have Raish standing behind Batman with his hands on Batman's shoulder, and Batman with a very sunrise cowl. He's got like the droopy nose to the cowl, which I really appreciate that touch. And then rather than just having the regular costume underneath, we sort of see the cityscape of Gotham City and some of the buildings using different colors sort of make up the bat on his chest. A really great job just by, I think, one of the best artists in the game today. It was really cool to see my regular DC Comics continuity collide with my love for the DCAU with Doc's cover there. And then of course, as we always do, we shout out the great Hayden Sherman, who has been providing the title card variants for each and every issue so far to date. And this one for the offer, I remember seeing this when it was solicited, and this is one of those ones you got to read the book to understand what this is. Mm-hmm. But it's a really cool image. It's like it's a dinner plate with a snuffed out candle, a glass of wine, and a lobster with a batarang sticking out of it. And of course the name of the story, The Offer Part One, on there. Just a brilliant, brilliant cover by Hayden Sherman, who they just continue to really, really give that authentic BTAS feel to their work on these title card variants.
Yeah, they're a piece of work for sure. Something to enjoy, something to behold. I think they also recently posted on Instagram or maybe Twitter. They put up some of the outtakes or images that didn't quite mm-hmm. make the cut. Some kind of brainstorming ideas they had for different versions of the covers. So you can check them out on social media. Great follow, clearly gets the idea and understands the assignment each and every single month. So just an amazing composition for this month that truly you kind of have to, it's one of those, just like the title cards for the show, you kind of have to look closely to fully understand what's going on there. So I really, really, really enjoy it. Now, of course, that we've read the issue, you kind of understand a little bit more.
Absolutely, Cal. And that will bring us to the aforementioned main event of the pod, where we baselessly speculate about what we think could be coming next. Now, you mentioned to me off the air that you have some ideas, so I will turn it over to you. We've got a lot of balls in the air at the moment. We've got this the titular offer made by Raish and Talia to Bruce. We have him in the underground sub, Tim still up on the surface, unaware of any of these events. Then back in Gotham, we have Selina on the run, now involving Harley and Ivy, and all three of them needing to face down the returning Court of Owls. There's a lot going on here, plus Bullock and Montoya on the hunt for this mysterious woman who they saw. So there's a lot of moving parts, both in Gotham, both home and abroad this month. So what stood out to you? What do you think could be coming up next in issue 7 and beyond?
All right, I'm going to limit my baseless speculation on two things. One, we have Selina. She knows that Raish is behind or connected with or has joined forces with the Court of Owls. Ooh. and is rushing to try and get that information to Batman, to somebody in the know. And then the second thing is that with our little homage to a famous, I think it's a, it was it was it the Denny O'Neill Ra's al Ghul run where Bruce and Talia are famously in bed together. I didn't mention that, but I think the visuals are sort of an homage to that. But with that somewhat famous homage there, I dare say if they wanted to just leave some more open-ended strings here by the end mm-hmm. of the run, you could reveal at the end of our last issue, I guess it would be the 8th issue, that Talia is with child based on this, and we would get our cliffhanger of, is this DCAU Damian Wayne being it? The idea of Damian Wayne being introduced here, mm-hmm. would they take it in a different direction? Could it be a female Robin? Could it be, you know, or a female offspring of Bruce? How could we connect this in some way? You know, because it feels like we're going to leave some stuff unresolved regardless. Sure. In the next couple of issues,
I don't think Red Hood and Deathstroke are coming back in here, guys.
Yeah, they'd really have to shoehorn those guys in here pretty quickly, and I don't know that it would fit very well. So I think you're just gonna have to be okay with some stuff left unresolved. And hey, if we're gonna do that anyway, why not leave it with a cliffhanger like that where we get a reveal that Talia is expecting. So those were the two things that I'm baselessly speculating. Well, maybe not baselessly, but without any knowledge or necessarily any strong evidence to back it up. Those are the two things that I have. You have any baseless speculation yourself?
Well, I would just say I don't really have any unique things, but building off of your idea that the court and Raish could be in league, we know that the Lazarus Pit no longer could make Raish youthful, but folks will remember that there was some way that the court had to make people younger, as we saw when the thought to be dead Hamilton Hill was revealed as the sort of brainwashed leader of the Court of Owls, and he was suddenly looking a lot younger than he had in previous iterations of the series, using some sort of rejuvenation that the court has passed down through different generations of their secret society. So could it be that Raish is working with the court in some way to extend his own life, that this is all a front to distract Batman for something, while the court perhaps secures his immortality in a different way than the Lazarus pit.
I like that. I think that there is more than enough evidence. There's probably more evidence to support that than there is to support a Batman offspring. So yeah, I like that theory. That's good.
Yeah, we will. We'll of course have to wait and see when we come back next month to review issue 7 and see if any of our questions or speculation is answered. And we can't wait to do that. And we want to thank everybody for listening to this episode. As always, we want to hear what you think. Most importantly, hit us up on Instagram or Twitter at DCAUReview on both platforms. You can send us a private message if you don't want to. You can also reply to the Cal always sets up a special poll and a special question on the Spotify version of our podcast. So if you listen to our podcast on Spotify, you can also reach us that way and let us know what you think of this issue. What baseless speculation do you have about where the story could be going? Is there some other plot thread, perhaps from an episode or from a previous issue that we're not thinking of? How do you think Catwoman got involved in all of this? Let's hit us up, give your theories as well. Once again, at DCAU Review. And of course, however you listen to us, we thank you, whether you do so on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or of course, as Cal mentioned, on the wonderful Pod Tower YouTube channel, where you can get not only content from ourselves, but several other great DCAU aficionados. And yeah, Cal, we're wrapping up here, and gosh, 2 issues left. It's as you said, the final countdown, but really can't wait to see what's next.
Yeah, Liam, it's going to be a great time. It's sad to see it. Sad to see it go. We were talking before we went on the air that you know, whenever we have a BTAC review to do, it's usually piggybacked on one of our other reviews, so it can be a little bit taxing to have 2 podcasts in the same week. But at the same time, you know, we will miss it when it's gone. So we are both taking the good with the bad and taking our lumps, so to speak. But yeah, we are treasuring the final moments that we have with this incredible team, and as you mentioned, just the incredible artwork and just the fun that we have each and every month opening one of these issues up and experiencing more DCAU content.
That's right, Cal, and we want to once again thank everybody for listening to this episode, and we hope you come back and listen to another one very soon. But until then, I'm Liam.
And I'm Cal.
And we'll be back soon with another episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.